So we are in the second day of our four-day retreat on the Four Seals of Buddhism. And it is said that these four seals contain the essence of Buddhism. And if you ever hear a Buddhist teaching that is not in accord with this, it is said it is not a Buddhist teaching. So these four seals are sort of they're interpreted differently, Theravada, Mahayana all agree that these are the essence of the Buddhist teaching, right? And so yesterday we dealt with, oh, it's gone, impermanent. All composite phenomena are impermanent, remember? And we spent the whole day and night and even again this morning, meditating on this and reflecting on this. And again, as I said earlier, there should be a result, and the result should be positive. The result should not be either nihilistic, which is, you know, everything's impermanent, nothing lasts, so nothing really matters. You see, that's one way somebody could go. Or we could go toward hedonism, nothing lasts, so I might as well grab as much pleasure as I can for myself while I'm alive. So these are the two extremes, which again, just produce, anyhow, don't produce happiness. So for those of us who meditate deeply on impermanence and death, the result should be, one, that in the midst of this impermanent world, we are at ease. There's a greater ease and openness, right? Because when you think things are permanent, right, then you're kind of heavy. You're heavy. And your emotional response to life is heavy, right? Because it's all about attachment and aversion, right? That's the way we respond to the permanent world. So if we really get impermanence, there's an ease, there's an openness in the midst of impermanence, and also there's an ability to always, as I said, recognize that no matter what's happening, whatever kind of phenomena is appearing, whether in the so-called external world or the internal world or the mind, you know it is all just a conditioned thing. It's just arising because of causes and conditions. It is just subject to causes and effects, right? And therefore you are not, you know, the whole, not only attachment aversion, but just this resistance to accepting life, situations, people, you know, as they are, goes away. Just by recognizing the nature of I mean, are there any questions about that before we go on to the next one? I mean, does anybody have any, you know, not seeing, not understanding, the impermanent nature of all phenomena, and not understanding how central this is to our ability to live a life in ease? But I forgot to mention also to, move us in a different direction in life. If you know that everything's impermanent, that nothing stays the same, not only do things upset you the way you usually do, but also you understand the preciousness of this moment. You know, and when you involve yourself, let's say, in aversive relations with people, anger, it's all based on what? In that moment, you forget that both of us, all of us, are impermanent. Right? None of us are going to be here in a while. All of us, could die tonight. So without that kind of awareness, we give great play to our what? To our reactivity to life and people and situations. And it's not only, as talked about yesterday, and Thich Nhat Hanh does a lot with, that when you kind of get impermanence, it makes the moment so much more precious and real because that's all you have, Right. But as I said last night, more importantly, is if you turn your life toward meaning and purpose. Because we don't have time. We only think we have time. Right? None of us know how things are going to unfold. Right? So, you know, now's the time. If you want to wake up, now's the time. If you want to transform, now's the time. If you want to be happy, now's the time. You know, we indulge ourselves in our misery, and but we have the aspiration to be happy. And yet if we look at what we're doing all day, we're just, for many of us, we're just cultivating unhappiness. When are we going to cultivate happiness? When are we going to cultivate wisdom and insight? You know, anybody have a guess? That's if we have the right answer. But for most of us, it's, you know, I'm working on it. I mean, can you hear the nonsense we spew forth? I'm working the Buddhist path. I'm working to wake up. These that are well listed in the preliminaries. I mean, we have them all. Everybody sitting here has them. Right? You know, we're like rich people who go around begging for food. So, please, the seal of impermanence is something to meditate on, not cognitively, but, you know, in the beginning it's cognitive, but afterwards it's got to be deep, because it comes from reflection, so it gets inside you. So you actually see the unfolding of all conditioned existence in this way. Right? Simply the unfolding of causes and conditions, it's all just cause and effect. This is the nature of phenomena. What phenomena? All conditioned phenomena. All composite phenomena. Good. On that cheery note, funny the things that make me happy, right? This is what Buddha Dharma will do to you. Okay, so what is the next seal? And this is, again, you've heard me say, for those who've heard me speak about this, this is a hard one for Americans, right? All contaminated things are unsatisfactory. Another version is everything that is stained brings suffering. Contaminated, stained, defiled, conditioned, mundane, these are all, when I looked it up, various kinds of translations for this word. Contaminated things, stained things, defiled things, conditioned things, mundane things. All are fundamentally unsatisfactory. Will not bring satisfaction. Does everybody know what satisfaction is? Does everyone? So think about, right? Being hungry is the state of dissatisfaction, right? Right? So everybody knows what it's like to be hungry. To want, to need, right? You're hungry, so you're unsatisfied with your current state, right? Then does everybody know the experience of feeling full, right? You know, you've eaten not overloaded, but you've eaten enough and you feel full, and then you can what? Well, and you feel good. You feel satisfied. You know, we talk, oh, I'm satisfied. My hunger is satisfied. I think that's what we say downstairs. My hunger is satisfied. Right? But think about that feeling of satisfaction. How do you know you're satisfied? You know, why do we say my hunger is satisfied? Because you feel what? you're no longer in a state of neediness, are you? Before we were in a state of neediness, then we were not in a state of neediness, right? So the interesting thing is, why does it say that all contaminated, stained, defiled, conditioned things are fundamentally unsatisfactory? This is very powerful. Well, that's part of it. Impermanence, they definitely interrelate. Because when we have the feeling of satisfaction that we got, let's say, from breakfast, how long does it last? By 12:30, there we'll be again, right? Right? Dissatisfied with our current state, seeking satisfaction in the meal, right? And once again, we will what? Eat the meal. And once again, we will hopefully stop when we are satisfied. And how long will that last? Till 6. But of course, there are snacks, so for some of us, it won't even last that long, when we'll have dissatisfaction and look for satisfaction. This is what we're talking about. This is the fundamental problem with this world. This conditioned existence, this mundane existence. It's fundamentally unsatisfying because any kind of, every time you get filled up and feel satisfied, it doesn't last, does it? Is that true? Don't take my word for it. Is that true based on your experience? Now, the other interesting thing, of course, if you think about food, it's very interesting. Like, you get there and you go, papaya or oatmeal or I don't know what. Coffee. You see, and then you have enough coffee, right? But, and again, I'm not a coffee drinker, but think about coffee or food. The pleasure you get from the first couple of sips or bite and the pleasure you're getting just before you end, are they the same? Right? Remember how pleasure those first bites were, those first sips were? But by the time you get to the bottom of the cup or your last, you what? It's like you're indifferent. Oftentimes, especially, when it's this kind of self-servicing. I mean, I have gotten better over the years, but it'd be like, why did I take so much? You know what I mean? It's like, now I'm just finishing the plate, right? Did you know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm already satisfied, but then we take more. Now, you see, there's an indifference. That which was so desirable or pleasurable at the beginning is now like a burden to me. I got to finish, right? Now, anybody ever overeat? How do you feel when you overeat? Lousy. So isn't that interesting? It started out, what? Wonderful, exciting, pleasurable. Over time, it got less so, but you kept going. And we won't go into all that. And over time, it becomes actually a source of suffering for you. It's the same thing, the same food, the same. Isn't that interesting? You see, what's going on here? Do you want to write that up? All contaminated things are unsatisfactory, or everything that is stained brings suffering. Let me slow down. Everything that is stained brings suffering. And down below, could you just like put in quotations, Angie? Defiled, comma, conditioned, comma, mundane, as these are just other. Okay. Now, what would be your obvious, the most obvious question looking at this? There you go. Yeah, what is that? All right, that's good, you know. You know, so when we talk about, remember, things, right, which is another word for phenomena, it says all contaminated, stained, defiled, you know, okay. What are they contaminated or stained by? They're stained by duality. Right? That is the contamination. Now, what do we mean by duality in Buddhism? This is a very key word. It's not really found in many other traditions. It means that that experience, that natural experience in relation to things, let's say of seeing an object, is contaminated by the false belief, by the ignorance that there is a seer and an object to be seen and the act of seeing, and it's all happening in some kind of solid way. Like, there is a me, there is an object, and the transaction of seeing, you know, is all kind of real and solid. My thoughts, like the grasper, is a solid thing. The object that's perceived is a solid thing, and it, you know, as opposed to seeing everything as empty of any inherent, well, we'll talk about this tomorrow, but of empty, or at least understanding that everything is just arising in mind awareness, right? Right? Here, there, everywhere is just arising in mind awareness. Rather than seeing that, we contaminate the experience, right? Because we think there's a me seeing that. Right? Now, once we go down that rabbit hole, right, we are now entering another world, you see. Because immediately when we make contact with those objects, right, based on our conditioning, there immediately is pleasure, I mean, aversive, positive, aversive, neutral. And if it's positive, we move toward it. It is, if it's pleasure, we want it, right? Because we see it outside of ourselves, right? If it's not pleasurable, it's aversive, we move away from it. And if it's in the middle, we're just kind of confused or ignorant. We don't know what to do with it. We just ignore it. So rather than having, see, our senses, as we talked yesterday, are pure. They just see. They don't have an opinion about anything, right? See, the opinion is coming from who? From our mind, you see. We're contaminating the experience because we don't see that, and then we get into attachment, aversion, possession, grasping, needing, wanting, and then what unfolds? Samsara, this world unfolds. And we'll talk about that. But this is a contaminated thing. A contaminated thing is something that is not perceived truly as it is. It is contaminated by duality, it's contaminated by delusion, it's contaminated by ignorance. Contaminated by duality, self and object being different. I mean, we'll talk about it, but this is what it means. Yes.
It just occurred to me that, like, even when you get to the level of electrons, you know, when electrons are flowing, it creates magnetism. And magnetism has two things, either attraction or repulsion. Mm. just on the level of basic molecule electrons manifest.
Once again, Buddhism is supported by science. Yeah, so good. Is this clear? We'll take questions at the end. I want to kind of present this. This is another mark, a seal. All. You wrote other things. Okay. Right? Everything that is contaminated by duality, and for those of us who are deluded, who live in duality, that means what? Everything. You know, there are lots of people, even Buddhist practitioners, who hear about delusion, know about delusion, but you know what? They don't think they're deluded. I mean, it's quite interesting to me. Are there any mental health people in the room? Yeah. What is if somebody is clinically deluded, what does that mean? Yeah, but what's the fundamental about the idea they're having? It's not true. Thank you. Yeah. Right. Or else it just sounds like the rest of us. Right. Yeah. Right. So a delusion is to hold on to ideas that are fundamentally untrue, irrational, as if they're true. Right? That's delusion. And somebody who is deluded does not see reality, do they? Because no matter whatever happens, they always are filtering whatever's happening through what? Their delusion. Right? So if I am deluded and think I'm Jesus Christ, then every interaction I'm having while I'm in that delusion is tinged with that delusion. Now, has anybody ever talked to a person who's deluded, really deluded? Yeah, what's that like? Tell them that they're not Jesus Christ. Try that one. Right? I mean, if somebody's full in a full-blown delusion, you cannot talk them out of it because it's airtight, as long as they're deluded, okay? Our delusion is airtight until we start waking up, right? But, you know, there's got to be a little humility in us because it's so easy to forget that, isn't it? Because just like the deluded person who thinks they're Jesus Christ, it certainly looks that way, doesn't it? They certainly feel like they're Jesus, and they think like they're Jesus, right? And they expect everybody to treat them like Jesus, right? Yeah, try to tell them, try not to, you know, take their blessing. They will not be happy. Okay, is this clear? So this is a pervasiveness. Just what? Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So there is a whole, you know, we could think of pure and impure. You know, obviously awakened beings, you know, are pure. And their relationship to things is not contaminated by delusion, by ignorance, by duality. Right? Of course, yeah. I mean, they're, you know, but these are the four marks of conditioned existence. Okay. We'll take this step by step. Now, and again, many of you have heard these teachings before. Sort of like the impermanence. They say, oh no, he's not going to talk about the three kinds of sufferings again. Right, we've had intensives on suffering and dukkha. We've had talks. We've had retreats on it. And here he is dragging it out again. And yet, Who of us can say that we are not free of suffering and delusion? Until we are free of suffering and delusion, we have to continually revisit the teachings, or else it's so easy to go astray. Because we all have a voice in us. You know that voice? It's a strong voice. It's a conditioned voice. So, the first suffering is... Oh, I haven't told it yet. Okay. The first suffering is called the suffering of suffering. Okay. This suffering, we might say, is a suffering that is observable sort of by everyone. It's kind of a, you know, it's like, you know, would you say to be sick and ill is a kind of suffering? Yeah, everybody would. Okay. You know, to suffer the indignities and the infirmities of old age, would you say there's a certain level of suffering involved? Okay. How about anybody here, a woman ever give birth? Or a man's been there. But it was painful. You know, there is physical pain involved with birth, right? And obviously the whole dying process, you know, for many people is painful. You know, violence, war, famine, right? You know, oppression, right? I mean, there are many things that are obviously, we'd say anybody in that situation is overtly suffering. I mean, is that clear? People in the hospital are suffering. So we'd say in this human realm, right, there is, you know, the suffering of just, you know, why is there suffering? I mean, we know, you know, does anybody know somebody who doesn't suffer? Even these things. I mean, every day when we pick up the news, what are they reporting on? What? Right, it's a suffering report. You know, let me tell you all the suffering that's happened since you went to sleep last night. I mean, that's what it is. Day after day, it's a dukkha report. Thank you. Dukkha is Buddhist word. I mean, and yet nobody goes, like, what's going on here? Why is this? You know, what's this about this human realm that day? Okay. Right? I mean, enough that there's sickness, old age, and death, right? Which are kind of like, but you know, all the suffering that people so overtly impose on each other. I mean, it's just, you know, well, it's believable because we understand causes and conditions and ignorance and delusion, but right? So much of human suffering is created by human beings. Okay, is that clear? So the first suffering is this very observable suffering, which again, I think everyone here would agree, right? That all these things are suffering. And again, within the suffering of suffering, you know, life unfolds differently for different people, right? Some people have a lot of it. Some people don't have that much of it, right? You know what I'm saying? Some people live in parts of the world where, you know, it's like a maelstrom of suffering. You know what I'm saying? If it's not war, or violence, oppression, it's famine, it's locusts, it's, you know what I mean? It's like, right? There are other parts of the world where it's not so extensive. So there's variations. You know, there's variations, geography, and there's variations, you know, just personally in people's lives. Now, this next suffering is specifically related, you know, again, an animal suffers. So let me just say, you know, all animal life suffers this way too, right? So, you know, the next suffering is called the suffering of change. So this is getting a little more subtle. And this particularly relates to the human realm, our realm. Because our realm, you know, the suffering of change. Why? See, why does change cause suffering to people? You see, when there's pleasure, somebody would say, but hold on, right? See, somebody's going to sit up and defend the world. Say, hold on, Fred. There's a lot of happiness in the world, isn't there? There's a lot of pleasure in the world, isn't there? Right? Isn't that true? Yeah. But the Buddha said, that is suffering. Interesting. See, the first ones, we go, oh yeah, we'd all agree. But the second one, we go, right? How is... See, because he says, why is even happiness and pleasure, which and these kind of happinesses are not denied, but they're considered suffering because they are the basis for a future unhappiness. Is that clear? Because of their temporariness, because of impermanence. Because they're subject to causes and conditions. Right? Because when human happiness or pleasure begins to recede, you see, how does that feel? You can actually feel it. You're having a happy experience, right? You've just been with good friends, you had a great time, and now it's over. How do you begin to feel? What? You can feel sad. Yeah, isn't that interesting? Sadness is a kind of suffering, right? And then you might think about what? Do you like to suffer and feel sad? So then it might lead you to what? What? Seek more. Yeah, got to get some pleasure. Maybe I'll have a drink. You know what I mean? You know, maybe I'll go. You see what I'm saying? We don't notice it. See, this is just ordinary life. We don't get that it's, you know, it's just constantly. So that's why this impermanent world of change. Again, even of the good things, right? Again, as we said earlier, what is something? Pleasure is very interesting because pleasure only lasts as long as the stimulation lasts, right? So as the stimulation or the pleasure begins to recede a little bit, what do? What? Seek more. It's the obvious thing. Right. I'll have another drink. I'll eat some more of this. I'll go have more of that. I'll go, you know what I mean? Boom, boom, boom. Endlessly. I'll prolong it as long as I can. Why? Because we don't want it to end. But it will end. It always ends. And then we're stuck. Right? We're no longer satisfied. We're in the state of unsatisfactoriness, aren't we? And depending on our capacity for unsatisfactoriness, we either tolerate it and are just bored or sad or a little down or whatever, or we get busy with stimulation, activity, distraction, pleasure. What? Well, yeah, it could often lead to stupid things. It can also often lead to addictions. I mean, you know, this is not like just benign anymore. I mean, look at this world we live in, right? I mean, everything has a source, right? I mean, people suffer endlessly here, right? I mean, you know, it's not just like the old days where like the big stuff. I mean, we suffer what? Sex becomes a source of suffering for people. Sexuality becomes a source of suffering. Gender identity becomes a source of suffering. You know, everything. Religion becomes a source of suffering. Right? I mean, this is a wild world. Food becomes a source of suffering, big time in our society. Shopping becomes a source of suffering. Playing video games becomes a source of something. Gambling becomes a source of suffering. Shopping. Right? I mean, what is that about? You see? I mean, you know, the addiction treatment business is booming. But nobody goes, well, what's underneath that all? Not the specifics of the addiction, but like depression, anxiety. I mean, these are normal, aren't they? I mean, it's normal. Nobody says, what is it about this samsaric, you know, world where, you know, just this normal level of suffering is acceptable. See? So this suffering of change is talking about our world, the world of change. Everything's just changing. Everything's impermanent. This is also called the world of desire. We're just endlessly, you know, if you think about your day, our day is all about what? Desire. You get up in the morning, what do you desire? What? Coffee. Yeah. You know? And then after you desire coffee, you desire what? Food. And after you desire food, you think about, what can I desire next? What can I want next? What? Rest. Or I'll, after all that food. Yeah. Or, you know, I better go work out. You know what I mean? I got to go work out. Or I got to go this. Or I got to desire that. And what am I going to have for lunch? Or what am I going to have to dinner? And what am I going to... And I don't say this pejoratively, but you think about our day. It's just all about desire and wanting and needing. Isn't it? Yeah. And nobody ever stops and goes, well, what's that all producing? And what's the mind state underneath all that? So the Buddha calls this world of ours, which we think is normal, he said, this is the world, this is suffering, the suffering of change. Things is changing. And again, many of you know, there's that formulation of the eight worldly winds, right? You know, like the wind. You know, the wind blows the trees, it blows the leaves, it blows things about, right? So that's in nature, the wind is blowing things about. So the eight worldly winds are the things that are blowing human beings about. Gain and loss, pleasure and pain, fame and infamy. Well, reputation, praise and blame. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, we're all seeking the upper four. We all want what? Success, fame, pleasure, good reputation, to be liked, to be loved, to be noticed. You know, this is what we're seeking in life, right? But what are we afraid of? See, this is the winds. We're moving toward this, but we don't like that. So we're kind of always trying to get that. But unfortunately, we can't control it. You see, that's the problem. So we're just buffeted about, right? When they praise us, how are we? Happy. When they blame us, when they're critical of us, how are we? What? Sad or angry or acting out or go on the attack, right? Is that true? Right? When we get pleasure, when we have pleasure in our life, how are we? Happy. When we have pain, how are we? Sad. Angry, right? When you're noticed, hugged, how do you feel? Good. When you're ignored, not so good. Right? I mean, I could go on, but you kind of get it. When we're successful, how do we feel? Moving up the ladder. When we get a bad review, we get fired. How do we feel? Terrible. That's the wind, you know. And it's not pejorative. It's just saying this is, you know. These are, you know, working within these eight worldly winds is what human beings do. And they're always trying to get what? What are we always trying to get? The top four, and to keep them. Right? And we're always afraid of falling into the opposite and do anything we can to prevent it. That's again, the Buddha called that, you know, that's just, you know, it's like, you've heard me say, it's very, you know, it's like, you know, you're out in the sun, you live in Florida, it's hot, you know, you see a shady tree, ooh, I'm going to go over there, get some shade, you go in the shady tree, after a while you get it's a little cool, a little uncomfortable, you look outside, you see the sun is shining, oh, let me go out there and get some sun, you know, ooh, it was for a few minutes, how's it feel? Great, I'm warming up. Right, then all of a sudden it gets a little too hot, you start perspiring, you see the shady tree, maybe I'll go back to the tree, and then, sound familiar? Yeah. So, this is all the suffering of this saha world. And here we're talking very much mind-created suffering. This is just the human realm, the realm of desire, you know, the realm of attraction, aversion, and we're just running around in it, and it doesn't give satisfaction. Because even when you have what you want, right? Anybody ever get what they want? Raise your hand if you ever got what you want in anything. Money, raise, car, relationship, job, you know, and you know, anything, right? Meal, you know, you got what you went to your favorite university. Everybody know what I'm talking about. What happened? Did it last forever? No. Did the perfect relationship ever turn out to be the most imperfect relationship? Everybody laughs knowingly. Right? Right? You know, did the gain turn into loss? Pleasure eventually turn into pain? Talk to an addict, I'll tell you all about it. Did the pleasure ever turn into pain? It's endlessly bouncing about, sentient beings, caught in the suffering of change. Again, if you went to most people in the world and you told them this, they'd say, you're crazy. You know, talk to people who think I'm successful, I'm this, I'm that, I got what I want. But they don't look, you know, they don't look under the hood. They don't face what's really going on. They don't face all the things they have to do to keep going, to keep happy. They don't talk about their innate dissatisfaction that's underneath all of it, do they? The Buddha looked into that matter. And so he came up with this teaching. So again, the first one, the suffering of suffering, very observable. The next one, the suffering change, is a little more sophisticated. You know, you got to be a lot more discriminating to kind of see it. Most people don't see it, as I said, because they think this is what life's about and they're into the game. And they won't admit that the game is futile. The third is really rarely seen. Right? It is called the pervasive suffering, or the suffering of just conditioned existence. It is said only the enlightened ones can really see this level of suffering. And over the years, I've seen it, you know, looked at in different ways. It's kind of looking at sort of what we talked about yesterday when we talked about, you know, composite conditioned things, you know, sort of at the micro level, they're always in motion. You know, there's no resting place. You know, things are always in the process of coming into being, breaking apart. It's at such a subtlest level, right? that. So oftentimes it's interpreted that way. It's also talked about that to live in duality, or to exist within a belief that one is a separate self and everything out there is separate from one. Just living in that disconnection from reality, that fundamental disconnection from one's true home or who one really is, that in and of itself is suffering. And that is not seen by anyone. Only awakened people can see that fundamental suffering. So this is considered the kind of most profound, you know. And I think you've heard me talk before. I mean, I think it's known, you know, people talk about, you know, existential angst. You know, over the centuries, people have kind of noted there's just some fundamental unhappiness just in being a human being, right? This existential angst. Alienation, remember alienation, this feeling of separation. That seems to be so, you know, this kind of loneliness, feeling alone. It seems to be so deeply felt within human beings, disconnected from the whole. This is kind of this fundamental, all-pervasive suffering, which is very subtle. Most people do not see it or experience it. So there it is. Here it is. This is the second mark of existence. I mean, this is, you know, this needs to be meditated on, reflected on. Because if you don't get this, then you're always what? What? You're always chasing. You're always seeking. You're always wanting. You're always needing. You're always hungry. You don't even know why you're hungry, but you're always hungry. It's like, you know, people just eat, even if they're not hungry. It's like, you know, they don't even know what's going on inside them. They know something is missing, something's needed. I'm lacking something. So where do we go? Pleasure. So we're going to spend the day on this. It's interesting, in the same way, you know, when they talk about the meditations on impermanence, I was saying to you yesterday, after you've been doing it, you get to a point where you just kind of feel very kind of open and kind of, you know, kind of spacious in just the unfolding of things. It's different. When we do when we're doing formally the meditation on these sufferings, the result should be that we very much feel the suffering of human existence. So if you do this, and you really do this very openly within yourself today, you should feel, oh, so much suffering in this life, so much suffering in my life. I didn't even see it. I didn't have a name for it. Just for those of you who are beginning to go down the rabbit hole of despair, the fourth mark is nirvana. There is a way, but it's very important that we see these two first. I think there's a reason why these two are set for first, so we can kind of wake up, see what's really going on here. I mean, what else is going to motivate us to really seek you know, a continuous state of happiness and well-being that's not predicated on constantly renewing pleasure. Right? You know, to really have a sense of satisfaction and well-being so there is no more neediness. Right? So, you know, it's sort of like we have to kind of really get up close with this stuff, like we're doing. That's why most people who intellectually approach these teachings and say, I get it, don't get it. Because if you get it, you know, in your heart, you know, you turn toward meaning, toward purpose, toward, you know, there's an expression in Buddhism, we have to become weary. It's like weary of the game. I'm just weary of the game. Right? It never ends, does it? So yeah, and there could be resistance coming up, despair coming up, like, so please share openly. I mean, this is important because this teaching is actually very positive, very hopeful. But it's like, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you've been having symptoms, not feeling well, all kinds of symptoms. Right? And you're, you know, you really have no idea what's going on within your body, why you're feeling this way. And then you go to the doctor and the doctor says, oh, you know, makes a good assessment diagnosis. Oh, this is, you know, yeah, this is what you have. This is the problem. Right? And it's treatable, you see? That could make you happy, couldn't it? You see? You see what I'm saying? Even though it's like the symptoms are terrible. You know, when you know somebody says, oh, yeah, those symptoms are a consolation, da-da-da-da-da, and it's treatable, don't worry. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, you have cancer. But, I want to tell you, it is one of those few cancers that are totally treatable. How would you feel? What? Yeah, I mean, you know, when he goes, you know, you have cancer, not treatable. You don't feel happy, do you? Mm-mm-mm. Or, you know, well, you know, the prognosis, 50-50 maybe in most cases. But you're pretty far along. It's probably only, you're not happy, are you, when you hear that? Can you see it? Same symptoms, but different prognosis. So, you know, the Buddha's just kind of giving us, you know, naming the symptoms so we see them clearly, but I assure you, there's 100% recovery. So we're not there yet. First we gotta acknowledge that we're sick, you see. Most people don't acknowledge they're sick. They just keep getting up every day, doing what they do, don't they? Looking forward to the weekend. No. All right. Challenges, questions, despairs. Yes, Pat. I mean, this is wide open, so don't feel like, you know, this is not theology. Okay, this is not dogma or doctrine. If you don't get it or if you disagree, that's fine.
This is a very basic question, just uh-huh. from my own limited reading fine. In mm-hmm. Buddhism. Mm-hmm. When you use the word conditioned, are you using that as a way to indicate impermanence, or does that mean out of habit or culturally conditioned?
It's all of that. It means everything is conditioned by something else. Nothing stands alone. Right? Everything comes into being because of causes and conditions. Right? The apple tree is not a self-sustaining apple tree that comes out of nowhere. The apple tree only exists because of myriad causes, right? The cause could be what? The apple seed. See, that's the primary cause. But there are many conditions. The right soil, rain, sun, you know, there are the conditions. When they all come together, then you have what? The apple tree. Okay, so when we say causes, when we say means, all phenomena is conditioned. That was what we talked about yesterday with composites. It means everything. We're just, you know, we're also conditioned, right? We're the product of causes and conditions. You know, we think we're a self-reliant person. We're not. We're just, you know, there's nothing solid here. It's just causes and conditions coming together temporarily, and we're showing up. When those causes and conditions change, what's going to happen? You know, we're dying. Well, something else is going to happen. So this is, you know, there are certain phrases in Buddhism that you hear over and over again. So I'm glad you asked it. So causes and conditions are big. Everything. Nothing comes out of something that doesn't come out of nothing. Everything comes out of causes and conditions. Everything. Thoughts, feelings, the world, the universe. Yes.
So we can look forward to contemplating suffering. I see that. You've laid it out for us. My question is about the connection between this, the saying, all contaminated things are unsatisfactory. Mm-hmm. And then I understood you to say that the real contamination is this duality of subject and object.
That's its contamination. It's not like the object itself is contaminated.
So I don't see how those are connected.
You don't see? I'm sorry.
My duality in my thinking, my thinking I'm a subject, seeing you, mm-hmm. How does it cause all this suffering?
Because we're contaminating everything with it. That's a contaminated object is an object that is seen dualistically and deludedly. Okay. It's not the object. The object is just the object. It is our attachment. It's our misperception of the object which causes it to be, you know, stained, dirtied. It's not inherent in the object. It's not. That's why, you know, in Buddhism we say, you know, we may be acting like totally deluded, ignorant, self-centered beings, but we're Buddhas. Mm-hmm. And you might go, whew, I don't see that. You see what I'm saying? I don't feel that. But it's true. You know.
Well, if I flip it around,
yeah.
If I flip it around, uh-huh. Then if I don't experience duality in my perception, then can I forego the suffering?
Yes, definitely. The Buddha said, I teach only one thing, the cessation of suffering. Yeah, that's why the fourth mark is actually nirvana, cessation of suffering, which is good to know. That it's one of the inherent marks, seals of all existence. Yeah, because you know, this is important because some of the early teachings would give the impression, and I won't go into naming traditions, you know, but interpret it as the object itself is impure, right? So therefore, you have to stay away from the object. But in Mahayana, it's not that way. The objects are just objects. They're not neither impure nor pure. It is our mind that and our attachments that turn things into pure, impure objects. Is that clear? Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yes, Nina.
After we perceive something like that table, that box, mm-hmm. With our first thought about it, past the perception, because, you know, the first thing that comes to me is a word, box. Mm-hmm. Is that the beginning of the contamination?
That's the beginning. Yeah, okay. It starts right at contact because we're conditioned.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it happens like that.
Yeah.
You see, yeah. I mean, even the fact that you're interested in this and not interested in this already shows there's a kind of an attraction mm-hmm. to this. You see? Mm-hmm. And we just don't see that's mm-hmm. what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then, yeah, and then it all starts.
Yeah, you know, right at the second.
Right at the
perception
second.
To any
right.
thought.
Right, because it's not pure perception. Perception mm-hmm. is just we would say a pure perception is a perception that sees things as they are. Mm-hmm. You know, the eye just sees an object. But because we have been alive in this world as long as we have, we don't see. We've lost that ability. Doesn't mean we can't. It's still here. Right? It's still here. We still have that's what practice is about. We still have the possibility of doing our best to have a direct experience in everything and all we do. So we are living life purely without any, you know, as the third patriarch said in our chanting yesterday, likes, dislikes, preferences, give them all up. For and against, give them all up. See things as they really are. Then you can be for and against. But you know there's no absolute of right and wrong, good or bad. We don't know anything at the deepest level. Any other questions? I mean, it can't be that easy. Nobody's going like, hey, I don't like you talking about human life this way. I mean, this is a direct challenge to what's in America called the good life. I mean, everybody, you know, what does everybody want? The good life. There may be people in here thinking, gee, I got the good life. And yet the Buddha says, no, you're suffering. You know, it's all. Oh, Marilyn, over there. Oh, the bell master.
So in my head, yes, and as I sit and listen, I watch, but not my family. And there it
really?
Is.
Really? Is that what you're saying to yourself?
Well, that's where I see the deeper acceptance and understanding. I get it, but I see a lot of work that has to go
No,
there.
There's no work. Marilyn, I wish you would. You've been knowing me for over 20 years. There's no work involved. Just let it go. It's diluted. Marilyn. Has your family been a source of an unending source of happiness for you? No. Marilyn, has there been much suffering in your... Isn't that true? I mean, so you know this better than anybody. Right? I mean, why is it so hard to just acknowledge the truth and free yourself? Because not to acknowledge it is to suffer. You know, the Buddha called that the second arrow. You know that? You know, it's a famous thing. It's like, you know, there's the first suffering, right? But then we shoot ourselves with a second arrow. It's like we just make it worse. Right? Yeah, there, you know. Anybody here ever have children? When you had children, did you see them as a source of happiness? Were you very happy? That's why you had children. Yes. Then what happened? I'm not saying there wasn't happiness, but was there ever any suffering involved in having children? I mean, isn't that funny? See, I don't know if, like, deer have that kind of problem with their children. You know what I mean? Squirrels, you know, right? I mean, they have children, and they go through the thing, and they, little Bambi, they take care of them, and then they go trotting off, you know, to get eaten by the lion or something. But it's interesting. Human beings, we there is something just, you know, this is a realm of suffering. You know, that's that second one. You know, like, yeah, there was a suffering in the animal realm. We had a lot of fear, and they were all eating each other. And, you know, I mean, you know, they freeze at night when it's cold. You know, I mean, there's certainly, but they don't have this kind of suffering that we have. Human beings, right? So, I mean, you have to just go, why isn't this crazy? I mean, I get it, and yet, for some reason, I can't admit that there's suffering in my family. There's suffering in everybody's family. There's suffering in everybody. Is that true? I mean, is there anybody here who hasn't suffered in this life? I mean, raise your hand. Is there anybody who knows anybody who's never suffered in this life? How much evidence do you need? I mean, So when you say there's no work to be done, you either accept it or you don't accept it. See, we have this is another suffering we impose on ourselves. Well, it's like Carol, forgive me. Well, it's going to take a long time. You see, it's like we impose this time constraint. It's like you just saying, well, you know, it's going to be a lot of work. It's like, it's no work at all. You know what's a lot of work? Not accepting reality. That's a lot of work. Denial is a lot of work. Rationalization is a lot of work. Is that clear? Acceptance and seeing clearly is easy. I mean, yes, did you, and Louise, and then Alex.
So, when decisions have to be made, how does that fit in with all of this? If there's suffering, and you see the suffering, mm-hmm. and you accept the suffering, mm-hmm. and there are two or three ways to go,
mm-hmm.
how do you figure that out? Or
well, you just have to make, you know, you just make your best. That's what we just do our best. I mean, there's no, you know, it's like, you know, you have cancer and, you know, the doctor says, well, there are three kinds of treatments, you know. See, and they're tricky, you see, because they don't want to take responsibility. They'll say, you know, they'll lay it all out to you, right? And they'll say, you know, it's your choice.
So there's no right and no wrong.
There's no right or wrong choice. I mean, you know, it's like, but when we understand the context, you see, oh, we go, oh, yeah, this is the realm I'm in, you see. This is the life I'm in. Yeah, there's no... Yeah, there's no choice that you know is going to produce happiness. I mean, it doesn't happen in worldly life, does it? I mean, has anybody ever made a choice, let's say in relationships or job or anything, where they, again, they thought this was the right choice? You know, leaving this and doing this, this is going to bring happiness. Anybody ever make that kind of choice in life? Raise your hand if you've ever done that. Did it ever not work out that way? What does that tell you? What? Yeah, we don't know anything. But we do know this, right? And so relax. Don't look for happiness in your choices. You see, that's the problem. That's why you put all this stuff on yourself. Oh, got to make the right choice. Because you think if you make the right choice, then what?
You'll be happy.
You'll be happy and your suffering will end. No. And Louise, let me tell you the truth. That's not the way to end suffering. You see, that's a worldly way. It's not going to end. Right? Suffering will only end when we work another path in life. You know, it doesn't mean we don't have relationships. It doesn't mean we don't make choices, but we'd stop, you know, it's like, you know, it's not like after the talk I gave about eating and, you know, being empty and full, you go, well, that's it. I'm not going to eat anymore. You know, I get it, you know, right? Even if I'm hungry and I take away my hunger, I'm just going to get hungry again. I might as well what? Stop eating. That I would say is an overreaction, extreme response, because we have bodies. No, we have to learn how to eat with that understanding that I'm, you know, anyhow, you understand. So, yeah, I mean, that's, can you see, it's the worldly mind that still is controlling you, that's going, if I make the right choice, then I'll be happy and my suffering will end. It doesn't work that way, because the suffering's in our mind. And we'll take it with us. Anybody ever notice they took their suffering with them? Same issues, new day, new person. I mean, I laugh because, you know, it's like the Greeks, you know, you write it one way, it's tragedy, you write it the same story another way, it's comedy. It's like, you know, it depends on your vantage point. So up here, I find it all funny. When I'm out there, you know, it's like another story. I understand. Alex.
Yeah, we're complicated creatures, Fred, and we live in the human
realm. No, I want you to talk personally. I don't want you to give a little science.
Well,
tell me about you And these teachers.
There are things I'm conscious of that are biases and preferences, mm-hmm. and there are implicit unconscious preferences that are there. And mm-hmm. and if you're not conscious of it, how do you change something you're not conscious of?
Well, that's why we practice mindfulness, self-awareness. That's why we have a template in Dharma, of positive mindset. You know what I mean? You're right. That's why we need Dharma. That's why we need teachers. That's why we need Sangha. You're right, because so much of it, because when you say implicit, you mean it's just not seen, but yet it's affecting controlling. You're absolutely right. But again, it's not that hard if you understand this teaching, because, you may go, I keep doing this over and over again, and it causes me suffering, or it doesn't give me happiness. You see what I'm saying? So you see the result. So there's your, that's where you start from, right? And then you ask yourself, especially if it's kind of repetitive, you go, there must be something going on within me, right? And then you begin, the deep looking, which has to be fearless, right? And then the implicit becomes explicit. It's not, what I'm saying, but mm-hmm. that's why that's why I always say, use the Four Noble Truths as your template. To me, that's my template, right? Whenever there's suffering, right? There's an acknowledgement of suffering. And then immediately, what is the cause of suffering? Right? You see? And then when you unpack the cause of suffering, then you have the end of suffering, because if I stop doing whatever it is that's causing suffering, the suffering will end. And then the Fourth Noble Truth is, well, how do I go about that? it's the medical model, Alex. This is Buddhism, but this is the medical model. Somebody comes into your office and they're suffering, and you don't freak out, and you just don't give them you immediately do your best to what?
To investigate
to find the cause. And if you can, and if you find that the cause is treatable, then you know there's a way out, without it. And this is the same. It's very simple, but as you said, because it's because of delusion. Remember delusion. Delusion is all encompassing. When we're fully deluded. If you've ever been deluded, you've ever known anybody's been deluded, interacted, you cannot convince them at all that their perception of reality is skewed. And if you try, what you're going to get back? Anger. And that's human beings. Try to talk to somebody who's got a very fixed belief about anything, that perhaps it's even a little bit incorrect. Anybody ever try that with somebody there in their family or something? You don't need to go out loud. You can just think to yourself. What happens? What do you get back?
Resistance,
which often comes in the form of what? Anger, attack, denial. Right? Okay? So there, a willingness to, look at our actions, look at the results of our action, to be within our body, speech, and mind, and to acknowledge dukkha, acknowledge suffering. And to really go, what is the... See, this gives us some causes. Oh, I understand. Yeah, pleasure will never give me satisfaction. More will never give me satisfaction. Because more is like, it's endless. We can always have more. Right? Even Bill Gates is still investing. Do you read about it? It's like these people are nuts. Right? Like, how much, it's like, can you see this world? It's just driven. It's crazy. More. Endless. So we want to. What the Buddha said in the Six Realms is most people are so in it, they can't see out of it. You know, they can't see out of it. We are fortunate. We can sit here and see our way out of it. We can see what's going on and we go, man, this is crazy. I'm trying to find happiness, permanent happiness and well-being in a way that can't produce it. I mean, think of a drug addict. I mean, what an alcoholic, what are they up to? They're seeking what? What are they seeking?
Pleasure.
Pleasure and happiness. Mm-hmm. And all they're getting is what?
Pain
and addiction. I mean, it's like, we try to tell somebody who's in the throes of their addiction that that's what's going on, and you'll meet with what? If anybody's been there yourself or been a family member, what do you hear back? Denial. I mean, it's so, you know, this is what we're up to. Yes, Kevin. And then, you know, this will be the last. Is there anybody else who's got a pressing? Okay.
It's exactly what you were saying. Uh-huh. It's that sense that I don't recognize I'm the addict or that I'm deluded. So It's kind of this reflection. It's kind of like,
this is key.
Yeah.
You know, for those of you who've been addicts or alcoholics or any kind of addict or live with one or know that one, when do they stop? What? When they hit bottom. Anybody else? But when they hit bottom means what? They realize what? Yeah, it's suffering. Until that moment, what? There's endless rationalization and denial. So can you see why this meditation is so important for us? Okay. It's like we gotta, you know, that's why it's interesting to me. Like the result in the tradition of when you do the meditation on impermanence is this kind of feeling of openness and lightness and freedom. A number of people were saying that yesterday. But in this one, it's just interesting. They say the result is you really feel the suffering. Right? Like the alcoholic who wakes up one morning and finally faces, I am suffering. And it hurts, right? And I'm causing suffering to others. And that even hurts more. Right? And out of that can come what? What? Out of that comes what? Change. You know. An aspiration to walk a new road in life. This is the same. So the result of meditating on suffering is renunciation. And this doesn't mean we renounce our families or jobs and become hermits. It's not kind of renouncing. It means we renounce this kind of life that fundamentally is unsatisfactory. That's what we renounce. The way we're doing life, the attachments, the aversions. It's not the things. You don't have to renounce your family, your children, your job, your... Right? This is Mahayana, but we renounce our perceptions that are contaminated. All right. I want to see a lot of tears today, a lot of gnashing, sobbing. but I'm serious. You know what I mean? I mean, there's got to be. It's like we got to kind of get it, so we get over it, and we can really walk the path. Because if we don't, it's like for those of you who are active in 12-step programs, you know there are lots of people, they just don't get it, and they're just in and out, back and forth. Sad. What do they say? People, how many remissions do people have until they finally get sober? I mean, it's what? Five? No, I think it's higher than that. Like in the 20s or 30s, I could be making. Anyhow, we will end for now.